You realize, of course, that we could never be friends.
Why not?
What I'm saying is, and this is not a come on in any way, shape, or form, is that men and women can't be friends because the sex part always gets in the way.
That's not true. I have a number of men friends and there is no sex involved.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
You only think you do.
You're saying I'm having sex with these men without my knowledge?
No, what I'm saying is they all want to have sex with you.
They do not.
Do too.
They do not.
Do too.
How do you know?
Because no man can be friends with a woman that he finds attractive. He always wants to have sex with her.
It had to be you. It had to be you.
It's the Matt Bubala Show on 720 WGN. That's the famous phrase, the famous lines, men and women can't be friends. They can't just be friends. Is that true? Our good friend Heidi Stevens writes The Balancing Act at the Chicago Tribune. And her piece earlier in the week, In Defense of Opposite Sex Friendships, piqued my ears and eyes. And I thought we'd get her on the phone to chat a little bit about that. Hey, Heidi, how are you?
Hey, Matt, I'm good. How are you?
Good. So this is interesting to me because when I first read this, I thought for sure this was about Mike Pence not dining alone with women. But it's really about some pastor. What stirred this whole thing up?
Well, actually both. So this Lutheran pastor from the suburbs wrote a piece Tuesday, I think it was, on the Federalist website, which is kind of a conservative-leaning website. And he said, in so many words, you don't have any guy friends to women. And in fact, you can't have guy friends, that men are incapable of friendship with women, that they never turn off the part of their brain that looks at you and basically wants to make you the mother of their children. That was part of the inspiration for the piece. The other half of it was the Mike Pence, self-imposed rule that he never dines alone with a woman who's not his wife, even in a work situation, and that he doesn't go to parties where alcohol is being served if his wife is not with him. So just kind of a lot of barriers thrown up, in the span of a week or so between men and women, and the idea that they can just kind of interact as equals and colleagues and friends. I thought the article in the Federalist and the Mike Pence rule and ensuing articles made this kind of an interesting time to weigh in on whether or not you can and should be friends with the opposite sex.
It's pretty fascinating because the way those two things were written, it was like a way of putting women down, but blaming ourselves for it. Like, women can't be around because we can't be trusted. If there's alcohol in this room, I can't be there with women. I can't dine alone. Like he's some, pirate on, who's been at sea for 8 years and suddenly let loose in this room of women. It just can't contain himself.
Right. Well, it's interesting you say that because almost all of the blowback and outrage and analysis that I saw from both pieces, Mike Pence's, motto and this Federalist thing, were from women. And I kind of did think, like, hey, where are the dudes sticking up for themselves and saying, like, hey, I can be around women without wanting to take their clothes off? I can go to lunch with a colleague and not sleep with her. I just wasn't seeing that reaction. Now, I'm not saying it wasn't there. I didn't see it. I saw a lot of women responding and debating the topic. I didn't see a lot of guys weighing in, and that was a part of the reason when I wrote about it, that I called up my friend Jeff to say, like, let me hear from a guy on this.
Well, all right. So, Heidi, if Jeff did want to impregnate you, do you think on that phone call he would have said, Heidi, I got to tell you, here's the thing. I'm thinking about it all the time when we're together. I just didn't want you to know, but now you call me. No, he'd say, Heidi, of course not. I wouldn't know.
Right, my wife's going to read this.
Yeah, well, that too. And he doesn't want you to know because, it is a funny thing because, guys can, of course, be friends with women. Women can be friends with men. But I think that, you wrote something very interesting in the piece, as always, of course, but you wrote that that you feel like you gain a lot from having friends besides your husband of the opposite sex, and that your husband gains knowledge, you know, that you gain knowledge of the other species. And, you know, we're all very confused by each other all the time, right? Men and women in these relationships. And we, after millions of years, don't understand each other at all. And we always have the same issues with each other. So it's probably great for us to have these other friends. And I'd never, ever thought of it that way, that, you know, it is good to have other friends that you talk to besides your wife or your husband, because you gain a knowledge and maybe more of an understanding of where, you know, the different sexes are coming from. And I thought that was really interesting. But I also...
I think so. I think even, I think it even gives you insight into your husband or wife.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably very true. I also think, though, that it's silly for us not to be friends with the opposite sex. But I also think the hesitancy comes from, in some ways, let's face it. So, you know, when you're with a friend of the opposite sex, and if you find them attractive in any way, personally or emotionally, and if you're friends with them, you do find them attractive in some ways, because not sexually necessarily, but you want to be with them. They're a fun person.
Right.
They're a good person. And whenever we have these friends who are not our spouse, there's this, I don't know, it's sort of like a fantasy friendship in a way, right? Because here's this friend, this work wife or whatever, who I do all these things with and who shares my miseries about work and who understands I can tell stories about the kids, but they don't see all the other stuff that really goes on at home that our spouses do, which makes them much less sympathetic to everything else, right? You know what I mean? So I see where people can be like, well, it's kind of a dangerous situation if we don't trust ourselves to have, and you're right about this too, that we can make good choices. We can decide, yes, I really like this person. However, I'm married and I'm committed and all these things. But it's like, I think there is a whole thing where we don't trust ourselves. And let's face it, we have, as much as we do to women over the years, we do the same thing to guys, in that guys are dogs. Guys can't be alone without their wives. Can't. I mean, Pence won't allow himself, I didn't know this, to be in a room with alcohol without his wife there. That's like taking another step further and like just damning himself to this weak soul that he is. Well, if I have a beer, ladies, you better beware, because my wife's not here and now I'm on the loose. It sounds crazy.
No, I hear everything you're saying, and I 1,000% agree. I think even with all of that being the case, the benefits of opposite sex friendships, the empathy that they build, the ability to put yourself in someone else's shoes, the lessons you learn from knowing and caring about someone who doesn't experience the world the same way you do, who doesn't look just like you do, I think those benefits outweigh the risk. And that's not to say that the risk isn't there. Certainly people have cheated on their significant other with, you know, an opposite sex friend that started out as a friend and then turned into a friend with benefits or turned into a second spouse or whatever. Certainly that happens. I don't think it always happens, and I don't think it even usually happens. I mean, I think it's probably usually not the case, and I'd have to see some statistics, but if we're just going, like, anecdotally, you know, I don't think that's super common. Now, that's not to say it doesn't happen or that it can't happen, but I think, you know, most of us who go through life as mature adults who don't want to sabotage, you know, our families or our careers or hurt the people we love, you know, learn to not give in to temptation. And whether that temptation is sleeping with your friend or, you know, drinking at lunch, even though you got to go back to the office, or, you know, eating, you know, the entire pizza instead of, you know, two big slices. Like, you learn to say no to stuff, even though, and that's different than, oh, it doesn't even appeal to me. It can appeal to you and you can still say no. And I think most of us, you know, do a pretty good job of that. And so, with that ability in mind, I think it's kind of important to seek out friendships with, you know, people of opposite sex for all the reasons I just said. I think it just gives you a greater awareness and empathy for, you know, the other half of the population.
And at the very least, at least not to push away from those relationships because you're afraid of what might happen. When you say
right.
seek out, like if I told my wife, I'm going to go seek out some female friends because I want to better understand you.
Right.
I think she would give me an odd look and say,
right.
you're reading Heidi again and you need to stop doing that.
It's banned.
But at the very least, we should be able to have dinner with people or be at a party with people without our significant others without thinking, oh my gosh, what am I going to do next? It's amazing. It's very interesting,
so.
To say the least.
I think in, you know, just this last week, let's look at that Pepsi commercial, for example, or, you know, there's all sorts of examples of tone deafness, right? And a lot of that can be traced back to, like, you know, there weren't enough different types of people, different ways of thinking in the room when that was conceived. We all know that, you know, we're better, more open-minded humans when we're not surrounded by people who are just like us, whether we're talking gender, race, socioeconomic background, whatever. So to me, you know, your friendships, you know, really influence what kind of person you are. And to only have friendships with people who are the same sex as you just seems short-sighted to me.
Absolutely. Okay, let me bring up one other thing that you didn't write about, but I'm curious about, because so you're remarried. And you've talked about that before. And your husband, Michael, he was married once before. Yes, he was, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm curious about this because I've only been married once. I've been married for 18 years now. And
congratulations.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's a big achievement.
Well, here's what's interesting to me, because as you're writing this about the friends, you're looking – because you write about Michael and the kids a lot, or a decent amount.
I'm
not saying a lot, but you are still – I would say, you might not, sort of in this honeymoonish phase, because you guys have only...
No, that's true.
Okay. And
In fact, we just took our honeymoon a couple months ago, 3 years in.
Okay.
But, yeah.
So there you go. So you're still young into it. And I wonder if, and I'm very surprised because it goes against what I'm going to say here, because second marriages tend not to work out just as much as first marriages.
Right.
Even worse.
Yeah,
right?
Even more. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which I'm surprised by, because it seems like, and the way you write about your husband and about life, is I feel like I wonder if, because after 18 years of marriage, there are certain things you just, I feel like Colleen and I would imagine most couples really take each other for granted a lot
mm-hmm.
in our marriage, in what we go through and not having much sympathy for the other and things like that, because you got kids, you got mortgages, you got work, you got everything all the time. And
yeah.
I wonder if, because of the way I, when you write about your marriage, I think, God, she really appreciates and is appreciated. And they, I think, because it's the second time around, I feel like, I wonder if a second time around, you're just so much more grateful for everything because you've been through the ringer and you have a better understanding of love and maybe all that it entails, and you don't take each other for granted as much. I know the numbers don't bear that out, but I feel like it would be that way.
The numbers don't bear it out, and I share your surprise. I think the same thing, and I can't speak for anybody else's first or second marriage, but I can tell you that for me, after I went through a divorce and, you know, was a single mom for a while and kind of saw that I could, you know, survive and thrive under both of those conditions through a divorce and as a single parent, I didn't see any point in getting remarried unless I found someone who I was just nuts about and who felt like a real partner in every way and would respect and appreciate me just the way I was and who I could do that back for. And so I'm not sure why, after going through, you know, a marriage that didn't work and going through a divorce and putting your kids through that, why you would enter into another marriage unless it felt wholly different and potentially even close to perfect, as close as a marriage can be. And so it's surprising to me that second, you know, and third marriages fail even more than first. But, you know, I suppose there's a number of reasons for that. But for me, it just wasn't a goal of mine. Like, well, now that I'm divorced, I've got to find my next husband. It was sort of more like, there's no need to get married. I tried that, unless I find someone who I just can't imagine, you know, spending my life without, and that was Michael. So I'm incredibly lucky to have, you know, to have found him. And I'm not sure. if I'm answering your question, but
no, I think you are. I think you are, because maybe that's the key, is that you really weren't looking for it. And so many of us in life and first or second marriages maybe are looking for this thing that's missing, and
yeah,
maybe
and
we force things a little
too
much.
Yeah.
Not being in our 20s helps with anything in life. You could say, well, I wasn't in my 20s, so it turned out much better.
I wouldn't relive my 20s for all the money in the world.
You wouldn't go back and try to do them differently?
Well, that's true. I suppose I could go back and redo a couple things, but but I don't like long to be 23 again or anything. Ugh, not at all. Back to the, I guess maybe original point of the conversation, we're in a bit of a honeymoon phase. We're, you know, we've been married 3.5 years. Maybe some of the tough stuff is still ahead of us. At the same time, you know, we're not exactly spring chickens. You know, we've got a teenager in the house. We've got an 11-year-old and a 7-year-old. We're, you know, working full time. And so it's not a honeymoon phase in the sense that, like, well, you don't have any hard stuff to deal with yet. Like, we're middle-aged married people.
Yeah.
with all the stuff that brings with it. And I think we do a pretty good job of making sure that both of us are having our needs and wants met to the best that you can do that for us.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, because you have all those things, but you knew those coming into your marriage. You know, when you got married the first time, you didn't know exactly what was ahead. We all go in kind of blind earlier in life, not knowing who we really are yet. And so now you entered the second one, having all that baggage already with you, knowing you have it. And maybe having a better understanding. All right,
it's a leap of faith. Yeah,
it's always a leap of faith, right?
Yeah.
All right, so let's jump to Anne Lamott for a little bit, because you also wrote about her this week and her book about showing mercy and bringing mercy back. And, of course, it was inspired a little bit by the administration and where the country has gone a little bit. But she says that showing mercy is like a muscle that we have to keep practicing. What does she mean by that?
Yeah, she talks about how, you know, mercy is showing less judgment for people. It's being more forgiving. It's letting people into your heart, even if you feel like they've wronged you or if you just sort of fundamentally disagree with the way they go through life. Not just writing people off so quickly, I guess. Being, you know, showing a little more grace and forgiveness. And she talks about how once you get in the practice of doing that, and once you sort of convince yourself that you should be doing that, it's almost like putting on a different pair of glasses. So you still see all of the, you know, you still see people's faults, you still see wrongdoing, you still see people, you know, making mistakes and hurting each other, but you also see your own ability to forgive them and forgive yourself. When you screw up and make mistakes. And so it's just like a new feeling, a new, you know, action to add to the others. And I guess that's why she compares it to a muscle, because the more you use it, the better you get at it. You know, it occurs to you more quickly and you accomplish it more quickly, the more you practice it.
It's so hard to remember that, though. Isn't it like anything in life that's I don't know. It's
so hard. And I think social media makes it so much harder. I mean, it was kind of bizarre to talk to her and then hop on Twitter and think, like, this is all the exact opposite of everything she's preaching. And I see the temptation of both. I mean, it is tempting to hop on Twitter and join in the, you know, snarky or, you know, outraged tweets about, you name it, the Pepsi commercial I brought up earlier, Syria, Trump, I mean, any number of things, shallow and not shallow.
And but, I wonder if those are so large scale, though, Heidi, because I imagine the mercy that we really need to show, of course, to Syria and to everything big in the world. But it's in our own neighborhood. You know, it's more on, I would say, Facebook. And you and I have talked about this before. But I think the opposite of mercy is judgy, right? Because
yeah.
we see people saying we're doing this, we're doing that. And then we judge them either favorably or unfavorably because of it in these weird windows we get into their lives that are really not that real.
Right, and that really don't need to concern us. I mean, you can just see something happening and not need to decide whether you agree with it, disagree with it, covet it, hate it. You know what I mean? Like something like you're talking about your neighbor's vacation or your neighbor's new kitchen remodel. Like it can just be a fact that you don't have to have any sort of judgment about, you know what I mean? Oh, why did they do it that way? Or, oh, where do you spend your kids' college fund? Or, you know, all the like little, or why am I such a failure that I can't redo my kitchen? All those little thoughts you can just, you know, I guess bat away with mercy if you get good enough at it. I'm not there. Anne Lamott's there. I'm just reading and learning.
But is Anne there? Or I imagine even Anne would say it's something she has to practice all the time, right? I
mean, something she has to practice all the time. And especially, toward herself, she talks about, you know, she's a recovered alcoholic. She's pretty public with her, you know, parenting stumbles, and now she's a grandmother. And she by no means comes across as, you know, mistake-free or all-loving, all-forgiving, merciful one. You know, she very much admits that it's hard work, and she's, you know, always in the middle of it.
Well, those are the people we need more of, just like our own Heidi Stevens. You can read her balancing act in the Chicago Tribune and at chicagotribune.com. Follow Heidi on Facebook and at Twitter. It's at HeidiStevens13. Heidi, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone.
Thanks, Matt. Good talking to you.
And thank you, as always, Heidi Stevens. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN.